Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast. We're 10 days into the Giro. On this episode, we talk about...
We talk. We do a lot of things. Billy comes up with phrases that don't fucking exist. He's an absolute scrambled egg. You thought George was cooked over at the Giro. Wait until you listen to the absolute shit that comes out of Billy's mouth on this episode.
But we do dissect the first 10 days. How can the other GC guys beat Bernal? We talk about George's opportunities to win stages.
We picked the stage. George will win. He will win this stage. Yeah.
Went back out of stage. My head's exploded. Like, share, subscribe.
That's a great intro.
I'm not prepared for this.
This is going to be a good one. I can sense it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
We're fucking Jeep.
Are we?
Oh,
I'm so excited.
Well, you can't impeach somebody that's doing a great job.
From Suchin, Tendulkar.
Bruce Gigolo.
George Bennett, you deserve this, big fella.
What's that solution?
He's put the finger straight through the one ply.
We try and create a comfortable environment. There's no bullshit.
There's just so many of them, aren't there, though? They just don't like it.
Nelson, be proud. Yeah, baby.
We're back. We're 10 days into the Giro. And as promised, George isn't here because he's actually racing as we speak. One of the most important stages of the Giro today. The gravel stage is on as we speak. So by the time you listen to the show, guys, would have finished. And you'll have the other judge whether we had any idea what we were talking about, like always.
Well, we were sort of on the... No, actually, we were way off last step. I was going to say we were thereabouts, but nah.
What did we say?
Well, I think we thought George was going to be sort of in... ready to pounce around this stage. We were sort of talking up his mountain bike, you know, skills, and you know, this would have been a day that, you know, might have moved up to top five. Obviously it hasn't happened like that. I think the weather was a big factor for poor old GB, because you know, I used to give him a fair bit of shit, being, you know, he's not a big built sort of character. I mean, and a poor little fella, like when it's piss and rain and it's bloody freezing to the bone. I mean, I'm not a rider, but that must take its bloody toll on your bills.
Yeah, and I mean, he might still pounce today. You know, the one thing that George has going for him, obviously he's off GC now, which is a big shame for him and for us and for the listeners, because I know that everybody that listens to the show does support George. It's a shame. But the one thing that George has going for him, and we give him shit about having small man syndrome, which he does, to be fair, but... the reality is, he's a fucking fighter, George. He's a tough biscuit. And, you know, the race hasn't gone to plan for him in that sense. But I know, speaking to him a couple of days ago, that he's here for the next 11 days to fight for stage wins. And he has he has all the capabilities to do so and a lot of opportunities to come. And today is, you know, who knows? Who knows? It's a hard finish. He is a past mountain biker, so maybe he will. Maybe he will. Get us.
He just needs those two key things. One, good legs, that helps, but angry. If you get GB with good legs and a real, if those demons on his shoulder really pop to the top, he'll be doing the George Better one finger salute through the one ply. Sure.
I was chatting to him the other day about it. You guys would have seen he was in the break a couple of days ago, and obviously that break wasn't successful. Nearly was for a couple of guys, but that was a really hard situation for George, because he was in a break where he was undoubtedly the strongest climber, and it was an uphill finish. And when that happens, you know, everybody else in the break sort of looks at you to do the majority of the work. If people start attacking, they look straight away at George to close the gap. Like, come on, mate, you're the one here who's going to have the best legs in the final. It's your stage to lose, type thing. And that makes it really difficult for him to win a stage in those situations. And because that was the nature of what was happening, the breakaway never really gained enough time to have a chance. But I think coming up, especially in this final week, there's going to be stages where he's going to be in breakaways with, you know, it could be 15 guys in a breakaway, but he'll be in breakaways with five or six guys that have, you know, just as much ability to win that stage. So there won't be so much responsibility on George, and that's going to actually give him a better chance of going to the line. And like you say, if he's got that mongrel and he's got the legs, then those are the days he'll be he'll be looking for, I reckon.
Well, when are you going to get the bloody chance to do this sort of stuff if you're GB? Because normally, you know, you're at the tour and you're working for Roglic and you got a role to play on the front. You don't get the chance to go for stages in that last week in the second week. So this is huge opportunity.
Yeah, massive. And like, it was an opportunity for him to go for GC here as well, but we don't need to talk anymore about that. But like you say, Jonesy, like he doesn't also get that many opportunities to be able to go for stage wins and grand tours because traditionally he's working for Roglic or those other guys. And when that's the case, then you don't get the freedom. You don't get the leash. You know, you got to stay around them. His job is to work for Roglic on the final climb rather than being up the road and going for stage wins. So, mate, there's so many opportunities for him. And he is in good condition. Let's hope for some better weather on those days. And then he'll fucking get stuck in, I reckon.
But I remember a classic rider that would just pinpoint stages way down the track and just do as little as he could leading up to it was the Ween Dog.
Mm.
Matt, remember that day he won at the Giro in 2014 and it looked like he was creeping the stages beforehand and he was copping shit and he said, Jonesy. I remember the morning of, I said, how are you traveling today, mate? And he goes, I feel fucking good, eh? And I was like, you're going to go up the road in the break? He goes, oh, shit, yeah. So I'm like on the phone to my old man who's at the footy. I said, Emu, mate, you need to load up on the Ween Dog. He goes, what? I said, get on Ween Dog. And he was right in the front of a TAB. And he told everyone at the footy, get on the dog, get on the dog. And they loaded up on him. He was like 30-1. And then when Ween Dog crossed the line and won the stage, I told him before he took off, I said, hey, Ween Dog, don't want to put the pressure on you, but Emu's fucking told everyone at the footy and they've all loaded up on you. I think they got you real juicy odds. And as soon as he won the stage, he bear hugged me and he goes, fucking Emu, it's his shout tonight. It's the first thing he said.
I saw Ween Dog last week.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was at Tour of Hungary working for Shimano.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, out of the blue. I was just walking to the hotel lobby and the Shimano boys were walking past and I just, you know, said hi and didn't really take much notice. Then I was like, oh, fuck, it's the Ween Dog.
What's he doing?
I don't know.
Just selling cranks.
His exact response when I said, oh, what are you doing? You're working for Shimano. He goes, ah, you know, sometimes, you know, just maybe one run, one race every couple of months. Otherwise, I fucking do nothing, man.
Mate, what a fucking legend.
He's a legend.
Mate, he was one guy that, like, when he raced, he would literally block out 4 weeks of the postseason, and he could go hard. Mm. I've never tried to sit on a guy's wheel drinking beers the way he does. And he never changes. Like, you know, you get some guys and you go, oh, right, he's hit the 8-beer mark. He's sideways now and he gets all loud and chat. Ween Dog's just the same. Yeah. If anything, he just gets a little bit louder and he punches you in the arm a lot more, but that's about it. That's about it. And that's like 20 beers deep. Like, it just steady pace.
Yeah, that's him. But the Giro, I was going to ask you, Jonesy, how do the rivals beat Ineos? But I think it's not so much about beating Ineos. I think it's just about being Bernal. Like, obviously, the team's strong, really strong team, but Bernal's red hot, eh? He's red hot.
It's a big sign. I was talking on the detour a couple of days ago. You know that stage when he attacked up the gravel finish and just that explosive acceleration that you look at the past Grand Tour winners and they show their cards early in the Grand Tour, it's that punch that they've got that they just look another level over everyone else. And he had that when he flicked it into the big gear. I mean, obviously it's not the long drawn out climbs and they got the Zonkelin and these sort of epic climbs coming up, but geez, if that's a sign to come, he is absolutely flying.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like the ability to be able to, I don't know, maybe he's not quite as much on the limit as everybody else, or if he is, you know, he's got that ability to be able to like still make that effort when you're on the absolute limit, when you're like, you're already redlining and you can still like push the engine another 1,000 revs.
Mm.
But like you say, it's like all these climbs have been, you know, like as far as the race has gone with GC days so far, a lot of the climbs have been really only 5, 6, 7 minute efforts in the end there. Whereas, like you say, coming up to Zonkelan, which is in a few days' time, and then going into that final week where you get into the 45-minute efforts on climbs and off the back of already done 2 or 3 climbs that same day, it does change the way the GC guys race. It does change – it just it brings in different riders as well, you know, different capabilities, things like that. But So there's still a lot to play for. And the top 10, you could throw a blanket over them. I mean, you might you look at Yates, he's 55 seconds down on burnout at the moment. And, I mean, I'm sure he would like to have been closer. But as we spoke about in last week's episode, the Giro is never over. And 55 seconds is
nothing
in the Giro, you know. Yeah. And, like, we've seen guys, Theo Gegenhardt, he came back from 4 minutes down last year. Nibali, he came down from 4 minutes down in 2016. Froome came back from 4 minutes down in 2018. It's all in the last week, all in the last few days, really. So 55 seconds, it's a pinch of salt, mate.
Mm.
Which what makes it actually brings into question, I don't know if you saw a couple of days ago, the day before the rest day, Bernal and Remco going for their intermediate sprint in the coverage. Did you see that?
I heard about it. I didn't see it.
15K to go, like full lead out. And it was a 5 minute effort, as big an effort as they've made in some of those climbs. And all for 1 second.
What's the point of doing that for 1 second?
I guess you could argue that every second counts. I mean, I don't know.
It's also about conserving your energy, particularly for that last week, because you're going to pay these checks. They're all going to be cashed in that last week.
That's it.
All the extra effort you do.
I personally wouldn't have done it, but I also realised that 1 second wouldn't have made much difference, and I would probably be 45 minutes down at this point. So I don't know. They operate at a different level. But anyway, it's been fucking good Giro so far, and today's going to be...
They changed the bottle rule, you see?
Yeah, I saw that.
The crack.
So what's the rule now? You can throw it to fans inside the last 50K or something.
Yeah.
But why only the last 50K?
I suppose they can't just do a blanket thing for the whole stage. They've just tried to say, the race is heating up and people are stressed and whatever. And also because of the bike exchange car rear-ending old Pete, I think because they were going up to get a jacket and they could have said, well, hang on, you've got all these bullshit rules. Why don't you just bloody skin it back, because it's actually making things more dangerous. And the whole bottle thing, particularly with the crowds in Italy, there's so many people on the side of the road. They keep going, oh, it's the rubbish. Fucking hell, mate. You throw a bottle in, it's like throwing meat to a pack of wild sharks. I mean, that thing ain't sitting there for longer than 0.3 of a fucking second.
What's the difference between a wild shark and are there such things as non-wild sharks?
Oh, the ones at the Melbourne Aquarium are pretty tame. They're trained. You know what I mean?
Do you know what it is? It's the UCI made this rule on the 1st of April, and they've just come in like red hot with this rule and gone, nah, that's it. You can't throw them. You can't throw your bittens to anyone. You can't throw them to fans, even though every single person who goes and watches a bike race wants one. You can't, you know, even though it changes kids' lives, they've gone, nah, you can't do it. And then they've realized that about 3 days later, they've gone.
Does the UCI feel a bit like that substitute teacher that was coming in, tries to be like real authoritative early on, and then there's a big revolt because you go, oh, well, this young lady, she's not going to be here for more than 2 days, so let's sort of make her life hell. And then she cracks and they say, oh, okay, that's all right. Like, you know, they bend.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that they've come in with this rule and they've, you know, a few days later, they've gone, oh, fuck, it's probably a bit. Probably could be a little bit more lenient, or probably could be a few exceptions we could make to this rule. But they'd never admit that. They'd never go, yeah, actually, you know what? We made this rule, and guys, in practicality, it's not working. You're 100% right. This is what we're going to do. So they've just done like a real slow release on the grip, you know, without really conceding the fact that they fucked up.
So what do you reckon, looking in your crystal ball, the stage is on now? Stage 11, these four gravel sectors. I heard on Cycling News they said that 9.1 section is going to be like Forest of Arenberg. If anyone knows Paris-Roubaix, that is just a mad scramble to get into the forest. But the difference will be you'll have probably most of the peloton coming in, and it's going to be dusty, dirt. It's going to be absolute carnage.
Yeah, I was just watching a little bit of the coverage now, and they were talking about it. And so, yeah, so this first section, 9.1K, if you can see here on the profile that we've got up on the, if you're watching on YouTube, the first section's 9.1K, and it's predominantly downhill. And I don't know if these roads, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Jonesy, but I think these roads aren't the ones they use in Strade Bianche. They're different sectors. So
it's a dog's breakfast, why do you reckon? So they've laid down like new gravel and that, and it's just there's going to be carnage. That's what they reckon. Yeah.
And even strata, when the dirt roads there are in pretty good condition, although, well, they're in pretty good condition for a gravel road, I suppose, but they're still rough. But the downhill sections, what happened is because the farmers' trucks and the tractors for the grape harvest and stuff, they when they descend these gravel downhill roads, they corrugate them with the braking, and they get so corrugated that it's like, mate, there's no point in going into the section with a drink bottle in your cage because it'd be gone after 200 meters. Mm. But it's so bumpy, and the downhills and the uphills as well are so steep on these roads that it just makes it very, very dangerous. And the thing is that you've got like strata's a different kind of race because there's so much gravel, and it's a race for specific guys, and it's races sort of a different way. Whereas here you've got guys that are trying to win the stage who aren't GC riders, and then you've got every single GC rider who knows the importance of the stage. And it's like you say, it's going to be like the Forest of Arenberg. Come into that section, will be teams lined out, and you're going to come in into the off the tarmac straight into into loose, slippery, dry gravel, and then it's going to be downhill. It's going to be the most important sector of the day. Obviously, the next one's uphill, 13.5k, really, really long and really hard section. That's probably where you're going to start seeing selections made for the stage. You'd expect all the GC guys, if they haven't had any trouble on that downhill section before, it to be in the front group because of the nature of the ascent there. But it's going to be the first selection is going to be made from there on, and then it's pretty fucking grippy stage from there when you look at it. Jesus Christ, that'd be hard enough if it was tarmac.
Oh no, it's absolute filth. As I said last
that's day. the word of the year. Filth. Yeah,
filth. I reckon, like I was saying to the boys earlier tonight, Peter Sagan, like, okay, they're tough climbs, but he is so good at Parry Bay and on these sort of rough sectors, and his bike handling is elite. He could rip it a new one, you'd think.
Yeah, surely he's got to be the favourite for the stage. I don't know.
That's what I said. Now, like, nah, Sagan, nah, it's going to be too hard. And I'm like, bullshit. He's gonna gap a few on that first descent on the 9.1, I reckon.
Well, like I think we spoke about this on the last episode. The Sagan of 5 years ago, you'd straight away just go, yeah. Well, I might have spoken up with you on the detour, actually. Sagan of 5 years ago, you just go, yeah. What's the point of running up? Sagan's going to win it. It's, you know, he's paying $1.05. But he has been a little bit different the last 5 years. He's been less capable of making some harder finishes. But I still think, man, on that sort of terrain and the fact that it's off-road, I think Sagan's for sure the favourite. But
coming off a stage win, his confidence is fucking sky high.
Yeah. Some people are calling Bernal for the victory. And you know what? I reckon a GC guy could win this stage because you got that last section, sector four. It's 5K long at the base of that climb. You know, you can see it's sort of gradually uphill. And then it goes back onto normal roads, and it's a 5K climb on normal roads, and then from there it's only 4K to the finish line. So a GC guy could win it as well, you know.
Well, the problem with doing this show at this time is everyone will know the result, so we might as well not make too many predictions on this one.
That's great, eh? I love the fact that we're that prepared and that organised that we decide. You called me 35 seconds before the show and said, what are we going to talk about? And I said, oh, fuck, Jira, I suppose. And then there's been 10 stages we could have spoken about, and we've just decided to talk about the stage that's going to be finished, making predictions for the stage that's going to be finished before anyone even hears the show. But that's why people like the show, because
everything we said was correct and Sagan actually ripped in a new one? We look like fucking geniuses.
We're a good shot, I reckon.
Hmm. Oh.
It's 12K as well. Oh, no, that's tomorrow.
Nah, tomorrow, stage 12. Yeah. That's no good.
The
problem is, when we did these predictions last time, we just don't know enough about the effects of the gravel sector, particularly with GC. Like, they could all rip it to bits.
And also, if there is one or two GC guys, and I hope it doesn't happen, because like I said on the last episode, and I stand by this, I don't know if there's a place as excited as I am to watch it, don't get me wrong. I don't know. Is there a place for these stages in Grand Tours? You know, the risk of crashing, the risk of puncturing mechanicals for an overall contender is so high. And is it necessary? I don't think so.
I've got a good question for you.
Yeah.
I asked Iffy this tonight. What is the line between how many GC guys have crashes or mechanicals on that stage before they go, hey, something's got to be done? Like the rider strike, like is it three GC guys or four that fall out of contention, or if there's a serious bloody crash, what's going to be the ramifications, or what's going to be the bar where they go, nah, we're not doing that again?
Well, the thing is that somebody's still going to win the Giro, you know, and so it's hard to sort of define like, like what.
I reckon it depends on the ride. So say Dan Martin and say Yatesy, you know, crash out or whatever and have dramas. Okay, that's one issue. But say Bernal and a couple of the top end hitters and Evenepoel, like if they have serious crashes as a result, mate, they're gonna come down hard. Big time, depending the general public and the riders and everyone.
But the thing is, there's still guys, there's 175 bike riders in this race, and there's guys there that are going, rubbing their hands together and going, I'm fucking here for the stage. You know, I'm not here for GC. I'm here to win the stage of the Giro, and this is my best shot. And they love it. Maybe they don't love it. I'm sure they understand and appreciate the risk that it is for the GC guys. But the race is 21 days long, and, you know, there's only a handful of guys there that are there to win the overall.
Yeah, but then they're going to go, well, what is a Grand Tour then? Like Grand Tour, wasn't it about, you know, the best overall climber and the best overall, you know, adding in the time trial? You add in elements like this. Well, this is a specialized beast altogether. When people ride Paris-Roubaix, that's what you're trained for, as you said earlier. This is what your skill set is. You start throwing GC little jackrabbits in who aren't used to this shit. Well, then you border in like sheer care. Where's the balance between TV and the safety side of things?
I was just arguing for argument's sake. Because I said to you 2 minutes ago that I didn't think it should be in the race, so what the fuck, I changed my mind.
I like it.
But no, I agree. I think there's a place for these races. I think the place for this race is Strada Bianchi. I think there's a place for cobble races, and that's the cobble races. Like we spoke about last week, the idea of a Grand Tour is to have the best overall bike rider win the race. And, you know, if all goes well today for the GC guys, if there's no mechanicals and there's no crashes, then they will still be in the front. You know, they'll still be potentially racing for the stage win, proving again that they are the best overall bike riders in the race. But the risk is still too great that will take out somebody who, Bernal, for example, at the moment, as it stands, he's the best bike rider in this race. You know, that doesn't mean he is going to be until Milan, but he is at the moment. He could crash today, and then you do have that argument. Okay, what, the best overall bike rider in the race is no longer going to win the race because of this stage. Good to watch, though.
Hey, I've got another question for you. What's your take on former riders when they write, like, you know, editorials for newspapers and that, and really chiming in and putting shit on current day riders? I'll give you an example. Eddie Merckx ripped Caleb Ewan a new arsehole for disrespecting the jersey and pulling out on the stage that he did or whatever. Does that piss you off as current day riders when you get, I mean, it's Eddie Merckx, he's the fucking greatest of all time. But does it sort of shit you when you're like, dude, you're not there. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and mate, everyone knew that Caleb was, I think Caleb made it pretty clear in the media that he wanted to win a stage in all three Grand Tours this year. And it's not the first time. It happens every year in the Giro.
Chippo did it every time he raced.
Chippo never finished a Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Well, he never finished a Tour de France. And I've done two Giros with Caleb. He's stopped in both of them. Okay, both of them maybe was because he was a bit younger or whatever. But then it's not disrespect for the race. He's still there. He went there. He won two stages. He trained, like he said in a social media post, he said, if you saw the work that he put in for this race, there was no disrespect about it, you know. He loves the Giro, and he wants to go to the Tour de France and win stages at the Tour de France. And there's only 3 weeks between those two races this year. It just happens. It's just part of the bike race. And I don't think it's disrespectful at all by not continuing. And also, he didn't want to stop. He didn't want to stop that day. It was a bit of a shame that he stopped in that leader sprint jersey, but the reality was that was probably going to happen even when he did choose to stop, whether it be on a rest day or a little bit later on. But he stopped because he was injured, you know, and he was having knee issues, and he's got the Tour de France coming up in a few weeks' time. You can't risk it if that's ultimately the biggest goal. Like, I mean, he could go to the fucking Giro and race it and go all the way to the line and finish in Milan and have a fuck knee and then not go to the Tour de France. And then is he disrespectful?
What's the point of that? Yeah.
You know?
Do you reckon that COVID's made people like more poking the bear a lot more snappy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, we shouldn't disrespect Eddie either because he's a legend. He has a right to say those things, and especially when you like his era was, you know, I was almost going to say, the race days are different and stuff now, but the reality is they did way more race days back then, and he won all of them. I understand his sentiment for sure. Because it's a real the Giro is one of the biggest bike races in the world, and to stop when you're one of the leading sprinters in the race, there's an argument to it, but I think it's just how it is these days. Maybe we're soft.
Yeah, and also imagine racing back in his day. You didn't have like technology the way you do now. You didn't have GPS navigation. Like, what would have the pre-race meeting been back in the fucking 60s?
Oh, no. Who knows, mate?
I would have just rolled up and they're going, Eddie, what do you want to do there? He goes, yeah, attack 5K into the race. Adios, muchachos.
I tell you what, the race meetings would have probably been more fun because they probably had a glass of vino and a cigarette in their mouth.
Oh, yeah. They all smoked bungers back then.
Yeah, they were. They were just on the darts, full gas.
And just blind, like most nights. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. It would have been much better, wouldn't it?
Well, you think like nowadays, like as you get older and you have those sort of 2-3 day hangovers and you wake up rough as guts. Imagine starting a stage of the Tour de France feeling like that and going out and probably winning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And it even wasn't that long ago that those guys were doing that, eh? Like before my time, but racing Grand Tours and racing Hung. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. I couldn't think of anything worse.
No. All right, back to the Giro. So, all right, the Zonkolan one. See, these are the flat, boring stages. No one cares about that. This is the one. This is where you're going to see, after all the gravel sectors, I mean, that's going to thin out the GC. But if Bernal's still there, I mean, this is going to be where I reckon he puts minute and a half in.
The thing with the Zonkolan, like it's going to be a real, real GC showdown because it's actually quite an easy stage beforehand as well.
Yeah.
So the Zonkolan stage. I mean, scroll back down.
Oh, yeah.
That stage in general is not a hard stage. You know, it's hard because Zonkolan's at the end, but before that, it's not really hard. It's not putting. You know, GC guy, it's not isolating GC guys and early on in the stage by losing teammates. And that's where you kind of have to think like, oh, to beat Bernal, do you need to have teammates with you? And
I've got a question for you. How many riders in the peloton will be on the camera here wearing that butcher's cloth from all the scars from the gravel section 3 days early? You know, when they
the fishnet.
They love those fishnets with the bandages. Yeah.
Oh, they're good, those fishnets, though.
Yeah?
Like, they make the injury look way worse than it is, which is cool, because everyone thinks, like, fuck, look how tough that guy is. Like, he's got a bandage the whole way down his leg. But the reality is there's probably a little scratch underneath it, and the reason you wear the fishnet is just because if you don't wear the fishnet, the bandages, when you get sweaty and you get wet, they start to peel off. So, like, if you have, you know, the little one on your elbow, like, the bandage might be 5 inches long on your elbow, but then you've got, like, 25 inches of fishnet over the top of it.
Yeah.
Because so that it doesn't, so it doesn't fall off on the stage. I actually had a crash in the Vuelta once because I didn't use the fishnet. So I crashed on stage 8 in the Vuelta in 2016. I had a dog actually. Going about 60k an hour, this little dog ran into the bunch. And Rowan Dennis actually hit the dog, I think, and I hit Rowan Dennis. And we went down like a sack of shit. We came off better than the dog, sadly. But then I banged my knee up and it was, you know, cut my knee right up and everything. So I finished the stage and then we patched it up. And then the next stage was stage nine. It was the day before the rest day and we're on the coast. And I had a bandage on my knee. And then early on in the stage, after only about 30K, I started to sweat and it started to peel off the bandage.
Yeah.
The plaster. So I went back to the medical car to get it replaced or get a fishnet put on it or whatever. And as I was back at the medical car, someone went on the radio and said, they're going in the crosswinds. And I just saw the bunches go whoop, and line out into the left-hand gutter. And I thought, oh, fuck, I've got to just get back to the bunch first.
I would have just hung on to the car.
Instead of the doc, mate,
take your time.
I was like, I've got to get back to the bunch. It's going to split into a million groups. So I sprinted back, and then just as I got onto the back of a bunch, the fucking guy in front of me hit the wheel and crashed, and I went straight off the top of it. And then went into the rest day and banged my other knee up, and then I started stage 11 with fishnet on left and right knee. So always wear your fishnet, guys.
But I remember watching that doco Hell on Wheels, and that was on the T-Mobile back, I think it was, 2003? And the way they treated the scabs is they'd be in the shower scrubbing the scab in the shower. Like, you don't still do that shit, do you?
Yeah, you scrub, get the dirt out of it so they don't get infected.
So what, if you go into the shower and literally get a brush and scrub the shit out of the scab?
Yeah. That's step one. You got to make it bleed again, basically, I think. You get in there. It's a bit meditative. It's quite like relaxing. But you get in there and you just scrape. You just got to scrub it. And hope sometimes it's not dirty. But if it is dirty, I've had to get the medical. I've had one time before when I ripped the palm of my hand off. And so another thing, young fellas always wear gloves. And I ripped the palm off my hand. And I had the doctors with the real metal brush, steel clean your pots.
Yeah,
I had that on my fucking hand, man.
Oh no! Nah. Could you get an injection to numb your hand where you don't feel it while he does it?
Well, I was on the laughing gas, I think, for this one. This was back home in New Zealand, training crash, so I was sucking on the blue whistle.
Okay, yeah. What I would have done is like off that scene off Gladiator with the maggots. He goes, no, don't touch that. They clean it.
The leeches. Don't you put leeches in it?
Yeah, you had like the maggots in the, or was it leeches?
Oh, I think you put leeches on it, don't you?
I think it was maggots. And Russell Crowe went to grab it. And that other bloke goes, no, leave it. They'll clean it. What the fuck are we talking about? We're back at the...
I think that you... talking about medical conditions, I think when with real bad burn victims, they use fish skin now, like salmon skin.
Do they?
On the burns, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Fucker intelligent.
Well, you always learn something new on the Social Distance podcast. So there'll be heaps of fish stockings in this early stage from riders being banged up on a stage that we keep talking about that is racing right now that you will know the result of by the time you listen to this. So we are off to one of the fucking best previews of the second part of the Giro you're ever going to hear or see, folks. And then they get, as you said, they get to, what's this pointy climb? It's Cat 2. And then, this is where Bernal's probably going to pipe them.
What are we, so the George Bennett hashtag never took off. Are we, and since George is off GC, we're obviously still going full gas in support of him for stage victory. So,
okay. Good point. Let's pinpoint a stage that George should be thinking about. That's the mission now.
Right.
Because the rest, like, we don't, let's be honest, Yatesy, all chips in, Yatesy can. If he wins, we'll be stoked. Yeah. So fingers crossed for that. But if we're putting the Social Distance cap on, it's all about GB. and let's pinpoint a stage that we reckon, like if he lays low from now until this last week, what of all the stages in the last week? So this is stage 16. There's one.
Yeah, scroll quickly. Scroll through quickly, and I'll say yes or no. Okay, stage 16, yes. Stage 17, no. Stage 18, no, fuck no. Stage 19, yep. Stage 20, yep.
All right.
Stage 21, no.
Okay, here's the question. Does he prefer a hilltop finish or a descent into the finish?
I think for him, a hilltop finish. The problem with the hilltop finishes for breakaway stages is it makes it more difficult to survive. You need more time.
And if he's in a weaker group, they're going to be looking at him going, hey, you're going to pipe us when you're going to have to do the work. It's going to be very hard to get cooperation unless he's with another GC contender that was in the same position, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what he ultimately needs. Is he needs to have somebody that was in a similar position. You know, it could be someone like Jai Hindley or, you know, guys like that the line, where it makes it more challenging to win the stage because you do have to have good legs because you've got to beat a guy that's, you know, of similar capabilities to you. But it does make the break a little bit more productive. And you'll see that, like, later in the race, there'll be bigger groups going up the road. And guys like, for example, George's team probably is a good example of it. Going up the break up the road with more than one guy from that team, so that you've got guys that are dedicated. If George can get the road with one or two other teammates, and they're dedicated to the stage for him. And I think for George to win a stage, yeah, he needs it to be an uphill finish. Like I say, you need a bit more time. But when you get into the last week, it gets to the point where the GC leading teams, they're happy for breaks to win every single day, every day, because it doesn't matter for them. And it gets a little bit easier, even if the group isn't that strong, the breakaway group isn't that strong. It's not really up to them. It's more up to the GC team that goes, we're happy with that break. We're happy for them to go the line. And they just ride slow behind, you know, for the bigger part of the stage, which allows the group to get 12 minutes and then sure, the GC team start to race in the final. And then that 12 minutes might become 3 minutes by the end of the stage, but it doesn't really matter. So that's what he needs, and he needs it to be an uphill finish because he can then do what he's best at, which is going uphill and win alone. Whereas if it's a downhill finish, you know, you might get guys that come back on the downhill, and then all of a sudden he's going to line with five guys, and he's got to back a sprint against those five guys. It gets a little bit more tricky, whereas he's experienced. He knows how to race up climbs. He knows how good he is on climbs. So if it's an uphill finish, then he can use his capabilities to win that stage.
I've got a question for you. So now that he's off GC, are those – because when he was in the break the other day, who was his teammate that was with him?
Quinn Bowman.
Well, he was fucking riding for himself. He wasn't sitting back right. He wasn't riding for GB, it didn't look like. It was almost like, all right, GB, you're not on GC anymore. Every man for himself. All the best, son.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I didn't see a lot of that stage because I was racing myself. But I think what happened there was what we spoke about, how George was kind of looked at a lot. The break didn't have a lot of
cohesion.
And it basically just came down to the fact that actually Kun ended up being the best option because George couldn't move. George couldn't go anywhere. The climb was too short. The climb wasn't hard enough, early enough, for George to make a difference, you know, to get away with, you know, a smaller group, perhaps 15K to go or something. George really had to wait until the last 2K to win that stage. And at that point, it was unlikely that the break was going to succeed. And I think Quinn was probably just the better option at that point, given that's the way that stage was, the way it was raced and the way that the terrain was. But it'll be different when if he can get the road with someone like Quinn again on a true mountain stage, then I've no doubt that it'll be all chips in for GB. And likewise for other guys that have been in similar positions. So, yeah, he needs an uphill finish. He needs an uphill finish. And, I mean, at the end of the day, man, he had two fucking shocking days when it was pissing cold, pissing rain, freezing cold. You know, some people like to throw stones at guys and say, oh, fucking wear more clothes. Mate, you're not out there. Like, the reality is, it's when you're an elite sports person, people judge you that are on the sidelines, but no one knows. No one knows. And that's very likely the reason he's fallen off GC. But that's not to say he's still one of the best bike riders in this race. He's still one of the best climbers in this race. He's proven that time and time again. And
yeah, that's right.
He gets the clear run at the line up a 10K climb at the finish. Fucking bring it on.
Yeah, and we're going to show you the stage he's going to fucking win. So strap yourself in. So stage 16. So this doesn't tick your boxes, Bules, because it's not an uphill. It's got the descent into the
final. Yeah, although Pasir Gau, that climb they do is fucking hard, eh? So it's a long way. It's still 15, 20K to the finish, 20K descent, which is a long way when you're alone. But that climb before it is really hard, really, really hard. So if he was able to make a difference, a big enough difference on that climb, and go over the top with a good lead, then he has every chance to make it to the line. The problem is when he goes over the top with, he might go over the top with 20 seconds and he's got five, six guys chasing him behind, then it's harder to stay away by yourself, obviously.
And those, look at the very beginning. They are shockers because this is when you got the rollers out the front of the bus, Bules, so that your legs don't explode and you're warm, ready to go. And if you're going to get in the break, it's got to be from the gun.
And that's that. When you look at that start, straight away uphill, Cat 1, 10K climb from the holes. Only guys like George make the break, actually, on those days, because the stage started so hard that it really brings it down to only a select few guys that are strong enough and can climb good enough to make those breakaways. And that's when you end up in the breakaway where, you know, George could likely make the break with those guys that we need, that we've spoken about, to be in the break with him.
So is this one of the days where when you know it's from the gun, you're in the bus, you're listening to like heavy metal, you're psyching yourself up, all the talk, or you literally just get in some sort of quiet meditative state?
I take my headphones off on stages, like before stages like this, because I can't do maths when I've got my headphones on and I'm busy trying to calculate a time cut. So that's the position that we're in often. But for guys like Georgie, I reckon he'll be, I don't know, is he a heavy metal man? I don't know.
No, he'd be more like Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Maybe listen to something.
Listen,
like,
it's sort of deep lyrics, talking about like coming, like rising from the dead and winning a stage.
Yeah. he's not an Eye of the Tiger man, eh? He'll be listening to like, you know, some.
We tried that on him once, remember? When he was at the Vuelta, and he's like, shut that shit off, guys. Fuck are you doing? We tried.
There's plenty of opportunities for him. Plenty of opportunities, and plenty of opportunities for going back to the GC battle as well, for differences to be made up. That 55 seconds, although 55 seconds is still a disadvantage, it's definitely not insurmountable. Is that a good word? What's that word mean?
Yeah.
Insurmountable?
Insurmountable, isn't it?
Insurmountable. To close that for guys like Yatesy, who's obviously also in really good form and been laying pretty low. So that's where it's going to be. Hell of a last week, actually.
So 16's got the George Bennett tick if we can get in the break from the gun.
Yeah.
17, geez, starting, it's descending for 57 Ks or what, 54 Ks from the gun. That's the complete opposite.
Mm. Which leads you to the fact that there's different guys in the breakaway on this day. Also harder to get a big advantage because it's so fast until that second to last climb. So every chance that the break's not really that far up the road by the time you get to that first big climb at kilometer 140, which is 45K to go, and you get to that climb, you might only have 4 or 5 minutes. And the fact that climb's also so hard, and then it's a straightaway descent and effectively into the last climb to the finish, the GC guys will actually race a little bit up there. They'll put
because are they getting time bonuses on these sprints there?
Yeah, but the break will be up the road there, so they won't worry about them. But the GC teams will actually, like guys like teams like Ineos, will actually put a bit of pressure on up that climb, because then it isolates the other guys. You know, like it would isolate Remco, for example. He might be alone, or maybe Joao Almeida will be there with him. But it just puts the rivals in positions where they've got no teammates or very limited teammates. So they race pretty hard up there, which means the breakaway is a little bit harder for the breakaway to succeed. And I think probably a stage that
too much doubt in this one. We've been in it. This one's shit. That's stage 18. Been that. All right. Yeah. So he's either got 16, 19, or 20.
Yeah. I think 19 and 20 are both opportunities for sure.
Okay. If you had to make a call out of the three, so 16, 19, or 20, look into your crystal ball, what do you think?
I think 16.
Yep.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, he could also just stay within time cut and really rest up the pins, because most people are going to be absolutely pinned by the time they get to stage 19 and 20. And then if he can conserve as much energy over the next 8 or 9 days, this is when, you know, he can really have the better legs.
But the thing is with those starts, like stage 16 is such a good start for him because it's uphill. So there's only a handful of guys that can make the breakaway in those days, and they're guys that can climb well. And so that in turn means that they, when they're up the road and they're just riding still together, they're not quite racing for the stage victory yet, they're going up those first couple of climbs fast. Whereas those stage 19 and stage 20, which have flat starts for 50K, you get guys, anybody can make the break on those days effectively.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
Physically, I mean, it's going to be really hard to get in the break because it will go for a long, long time. But physically, anyone's capable of making the break on those days. And then often those guys will be guys that aren't fast climbers, which means that they go up those next two climbs slower, which means it's hard to get time. The cohesion is not quite as good because you get 75% of people in the break going, fuck, I can't win it. I'm just here to, I don't know, I just had to, my director told me to follow the move, so I did, but fuck, I don't know why. So it makes it a bit harder, but yeah. That stage 20 is a monster, eh?
Jesus. Oh, it's filthy. It's shocking.
Absolute filth.
Now, I reckon, and also the omen is, wasn't stage 16 your nemesis?
It was, yeah.
I think it's going to kill that voodoo.
Very rare that I've had a good stage 16, but I'm not there, so don't have to worry about it.
Well, it's good we worked that out by dissecting it.
So what did we come up with? George's going to win stage 16.
Stage 16. And fingers crossed Yatesy can bop around the pointy end. Now, another other matters, Samuel. I'm making an executive decision on behalf of you, George, and the rest of the team. I don't think we go with this company, who shall be unnamed, for merchandise. Well, I didn't want to name and shame, but, mate, I ordered that fucking jumper 2 months ago. Still hasn't arrived. That denim shirt, it got lost in Vietnam. We can't put people through this.
Well, as much as I'd like to blame Printful, I feel like it's probably more to do with our abilities of setting up this system up. Because
I got the hat. So where's me jumper?
Well, good question. But I think the problem is that they come from different places because they've got spots all around the world. And I mean, I know of another cycling podcast that does really well with merchandise, and they use the same website. And
You know what? I reckon we put it out there. Because look, mate, we haven't organised anything. And what is it? It's near the end of May. Surely there's someone out there, preferably Australia, New Zealand. We want to support our own, that can do merch, that wants to get involved, that can take this off our hands, and we can work with you, and we'll pump you up on the show. We'll get you on there. We'll pump up your business. But just give it to someone that knows what the fuck they're doing.
Well, I actually have somebody who I see on a regular basis that has been willing to help us. And because I'm such a useless prick, and we all are useless, I haven't really used that source to the ability that I could.
What do they do?
It's just my friend who knows how to fucking do it. And I also did get an email when you ordered that jumper saying that the design wasn't quite right, and we had to go onto the website to approve the alteration they made to then be able to fit the embroidery on the denim shirt. And did you do that?
No, but don't worry about the denim shirt. I've written that off. Where the fuck's my jumper? Where's my red hoodie?
It's getting cold in Melbourne.
Oh, it's bullshit. I don't want to put people through waiting for two and a half months and then, no, you know, awesome. Spending $4,000 on bloody postage.
Yeah.
There's got to be a better way, Bills.
Let's go
a different way. Let's make an executive decision. Put the hand down. If you an Australian or New Zealand company and you want to take over the merch, drop us a line. Drop us a line. Send for us a message.
For free also.
No, we'll chop you in on the cut.
All right, we'll give them a cut of the...
Help me help you.
We'll give them a cut of the earnings. And also, Jonesy, I sent you some updated logos because the logo you've got on your hat there is the one with you. You got a big forehead crack.
Which is that one.
It's not supposed to be there. So I sent you the logos, but I don't know if you downloaded them. It's probably expired, so I'll do it again.
Okay, thanks, mate.
Another little bit of admin. Someone reached out to ask for how to ask questions for the show. So I do think it's a good time to bring a new segment in. We'll start this next week because not a lot of people – we get more listeners than people that follow us on social media, which is actually frankly unacceptable. Everyone out there has social media these days. If you follow the show, if you listen to the show, follow our social media because on there's no content.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you want with a social media feed. You don't want to be – getting shit forced down your throat every single day, but follow the Social Distance Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook if you want, but that's a bit fucking old school. Just Instagram. Instagram's the best.
Yeah.
And then we're going to bring a new segment in next week where you can contact us. You can email me, sam@socialdispod.com. The beauty about that email address is that I can easily just close that down or not look into it. I don't really look at it much.
You've been hacked before.
Been hacked before, so go on there, email questions, and we'll answer 3 questions per episode. You know, so just send us one, you don't have to send us 3, send us one. We'll choose 3 from everybody that sends us questions. And I've got a couple already that have come through from social media posts, but I will save them for next week when the segment begins. So follow us on social media, like, share, subscribe, and contact us with questions.
Yep, easy. Any other admin before we go or any other things that caught your eye, Bills, over the last week? Well done at Hungary. How was it? Damo.
Yeah. Damo, yeah. That was nice. I obviously had a bit of a rough start to the year, and Tour of Hungary was a good opportunity to get a what's on your back when you have something on your back? What's it called?
Camel. Monkey.
Monkey on your back. Camel. I said camel.
Camel? Who the fuck's got camels on their back?
I don't know. I felt like I had one on there. Fuck me.
I was way off.
So yeah, I got rid of that camel off my back and felt pretty good there, felt pretty strong, felt like I expected to feel after training pretty well, and yeah, finished off with Damo, who cleaned out the GC, won the only mountain stage there. It was 4 sprint days and 1 hill stage, and he won that, won the overall. So that was nice to get back into.
Is that a big race, Tour of Hungary over there?
It's big and hungry.
Yeah, is it like the Tour Down Under for Adelaide?
Yeah, I guess so. Except it's for the whole of Hungary.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What can you tell us quickly about Hungary? What do they eat? Like, what's their speciality?
Goulash, maybe.
Goulash.
I don't know. We went out for dinner after the last stage. We had the evening in Budapest. We didn't fly out till the next day, so we went into the city. Beautiful city, Budapest. If you haven't
really
been. Beautiful city. Communist until 1998, so they broke away from the Russian Empire, I suppose. In 1998, and great city. I'd love to get back for a holiday when this shit settles down. But yeah, no, I didn't have any goulash. I just had we just shared a snack board with different hams and cheeses and vegetables, and I had 2 pints of local craft beer, which I quite enjoyed.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What are you racing next?
Tour of Slovenia. So I'm in Andorra now, banging out some training days. And then I've got about 2.5 weeks, I think, till Tour of Slovenia.
Yeah,
Meza's hometown, Meza's home country.
I did Tour of Slovenia once in 2012.
Great race.
That was your first race. That was your first debut on backstage.
Yeah, it was my first race with Greenedge and my first backstage pass.
Remember that story when Gossie needed a shit in the stage?
Yeah.
He dropped back to the car And he goes, I need to go to the toilet right now. And we're like, okay. He goes, no, I mean, I need a shit. And everyone's like, but we didn't know how to react. And then Whitey's going, you got a cap? You got a cap? He goes, I'm about to go. I'm about to go. I'm thinking, what, do I film it? Like, yeah, what do I do here? And just as you're saying it, there was this like BP servo or mobile service station, and he literally swung off the race route, ran straight out to the loo out the back, and then I think he had to go back inside and get the key. You know, it's always like hanging off a spare toilet seat so no one steals it. He's like running in there. He just made it, just made time cut, and that was the day that Impey won.
Yeah, Imp's won, yeah. That's yeah, right.
Yeah. That and then race. Alan Davis was telling me a story once that he had like gastro in a race and had to go into a cap whilst he was on the bike. I said, oh, mate, that's bloody disgusting. He goes, no, what was disgusting is when I threw the cap to get rid of it and I looked back and I saw this little kid running over to grab the cap. I thought it was a souvenir. That's feral.
That's feral. But happens to the best of us. Last little bit of admin, actually. I do just remember now, somebody sent a tweet just 10 minutes before the start of the show asking, he's interested to know how the basketball season's gone, Jonesy, and if you're getting on with the ginger, or are you still that lock ahead to them?
No, we're done. Basketball team's finished. In fact, I've got a sneaking suspicion they're still playing. And I think I've they've given me the, yeah, we're not playing again next season. Everyone on the group's going, yeah, no, I can't play next year. A couple others, yeah. And then a few go, yeah, oh, well, I guess that's the end. I was like, I enjoyed that, just letting the steam out every week and taking down chats and those sort of yarns. But, it's all done.
You reckon they're carrying on without you?
Possibly. Possibly.
You'll join another team and your first game will be against Christmas. What is it called?
Christmas Day Angels.
Yeah, the first game would be like Jonesy's team versus Christmas Day Angels. You'd be like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. And then I'd be taking down chats and the starting five for my old team. It'd just be absolute steam train.
Imagine if you got there and the starting five was the original four and chats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't think so. But that would be awkward. I mean, could you imagine though if that actually happened, where they're like, they didn't have the heart to tell me, listen, mate, one, you're double our age, two, you're a hothead, three, you haven't hit a fucking 3-pointer in about 8 games, four, you're not fit anymore, you're actually bringing nothing to the table here, but we don't have the balls to tell you no. So just on the WhatsApp group, I think they've played it smart.
Yeah, they have. Good on them. Well done.
Good on them. So if you're listening, boys, chapeau. Yeah.
Hats off.
So, yeah, to answer your question, the team's still going. I've been given the ass, and you move on.
All right.
Well, on that note.
We'll touch back base.
We'll touch back base with our camels on our backs, and we'll see you next week, guys.
Yeah, next rest day. I'm going to go wash the stage now.